I must tell you that I have some conflict today. My field of expertise is product liability, and I have written extensively and consult extensively in the field. Several years ago, I was involved in writing an article that drafted a federal product liability bill. You could guess that the day in which that product liability bill came up for consideration in the Congress was May 10, 1990. I was supposed to be there today to testify. I had already made a commitment to come here. I say that only in that if the Hashgacha El Yoina, the divine providence, ordained that I be in London rather than in Washington, D.C., talking at a sea dinner, that I believe I have a responsibility to be something other than an after-dinner speaker and an entertainer with a few good stand-up jokes that will send everyone home happy. There is a marvelous tefillah that is set forth in the Gemara Brachos. It is the tefillah of Rabbi Nechunya ben Hakana. The Mishnah tells us how he mispalel b'chnisosei lebeis hamedrash, when he entered the Beis Hamedrash, u'b'yitziyosei, and when he left the house of learning, he was mispalel. He uttered tefillah k'tzava, a short prayer. Upon exiting the Beis Medrash, the study hall, every day, he said, Moida ani lefanecho, Hashem Elokai, I give thanks to you, my God, Shesamto chelki miyoshvei Beis Medrash, that you cast my lot with those who sit in the study halls of Torah. V'loi samto chelki, and you have not placed my lot miyoshvei kronos, with those who sit in the corners, in the street corners. Sha'ani mashkim v'hei mashkimim, I arise early and they arise early. Ani mashkim ledivrei Torah, I arise for words of Torah. V'hei mashkimim ledvorim betelim, and they arise for words of nothingness. Ani yomol, I toil, I labor, v'hei mamelim, and they labor. Ani yomol, I labor, umekabel schar, and receive reward. V'hei mamelim, and they labor. The Einam Mekablim Schav, and they receive no reward. Ani Rots, I run, I pursue, Fahim Rotsim, and they run and they pursue. Ani Rots Lechaye Yoilam Haba, I run towards the eternal life. Lehem Rotsim Levea Shachas, and they run and they pursue the pit of destruction. So significant is this prayer of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana that each time we have the schus, the privilege to finish a mesechta, a volume, a tractate in Shas, let alone in completing the entirety of Shas, that this prayer of Rav Nechunya ben Hakana is prominently the part of this of the theme. And I think it's worthwhile to stop and contemplate what that prayer means. Ani mashkim v'hei mashkimim. Anu mashkimim v'hei mashkimim. We arise and they arise. Anu mashkimim ledivrei Torah. We arise for words of Torah. V'heim mashkimim l'dvogim v'telim. And they arise for words of frivolity, for words of nothingness. I have a vivid recollection, one that is etched in my mind and will never be forgotten. It was many years ago. I was a teaching fellow at the Harvard Law School. My cousin, Willie Stern, who was a student at Harvard, will vouchsafe that what I tell you now is true. The competitiveness before final exams at Harvard is fierce. Everything depends on it. And students get very uptight. And one day I was sitting in my office, and one of my students, a young Jewish boy from Indianapolis, I will name him David Cohn. Wasn't his name, but the pseudonym will work for now. Came in and sat down and started talking. And it was clear that he was profoundly affected by the atmosphere and the competitiveness, and it was beginning to get to him. And he said, I gotta get out. And we started talking. I started examining with him what the tensions were. And I said, David, what do you mean you have to get out? I mean, you're a bright fellow. You got into the Harvard Law School. I said, he scored 800 on the law boards, which was a perfect score on the law boards, on the LSAT, the law school admission test. He came, he had a 4.0 at Yale undergraduate. I said, you'll do just fine. He says, all right. Assuming I do very well, then what? I said, well, I assume if you end up number 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the class at the Harvard Law School, you'll get appointed as a clerk to a United States Supreme Court Justice. First you'll get on Law Review. You may be the president of the Harvard Law Review, which is a very distinct honor. And he says, he looks at me and he says, and then what? I says, and then what? I says, you'll graduate at the top of your class and you'll get a United States Supreme Court clerkship. And he said, and then what? And I said, well, I said, you'll go to work for a Wall Street law firm and they'll pay you some outrageous salary as they are today. I mean, entering salaries on Wall Street today are very close to $100,000 for the day after law school. Almost obscene. And you'll become a partner in a Wall Street law firm. I said, and he looks at me and he says, and then what? I said, well, you'll go out to the suburbs, you'll buy yourself a fancy home and a beautiful car. He says, Professor, he says, don't you understand? He says, I'm in the suburbs now and have a fancy car. He says, and there is nothing. I played it out with him. And then what? And then what? And then what? And what I wanted to do with David is say, Dovidl, I wanted to take him in my arms and explain him to himself. I once heard this from a Baal Tshuva, Rabbi Grunfeld. You may have heard it from others. A young man who I got to know quite well, and he had his first child. And at the bliss of the baby, he told me that he wept. And I said, Jerry, why is it that you wept? He said, you know, I held my child in my arms, and I realized for the first time He says that the baby was not 8 days old, that my child was 3,000 years old. I wish I could have taken Dovidel in my arms and tell him, Dovid, there is a then what? You want to understand yourself? You have to understand where you came from. You have to understand that all of us were seared by an experience and an unforgettable experience which is part of your neshama. We all stood together, each one of us, at Matan Torah. We're all geschlagen, so to speak, by the same experience. It's part of us. You want to understand why you cannot be, why you can't find the satisfaction of those of the rest of the class in the Harvard Law School, because they don't have to answer and then what, and you ask and then what. And you ask it because it's part of your soul. Because you know. I had great ancestors back to the Baal Shem HaKodesh and before. Some of them said that they remembered next to whom they were standing at Matan Torah. Who stood next to them? And I tell you that today it isn't limited to those great saints, those great tzaddikim who said that they remembered whom next to whom they stood at Matan Torah. Today, you can find it at the Kreisel when Mayor Schuster is able to reach out to youngsters who come there from all parts of the world. And whether it's in New York or Boston or Phoenix, Arizona or Milwaukee, Wisconsin or a gosh forsaken town, university town like Ann Arbor, Michigan, or in the deep south in America, in Atlanta, Georgia, well, you hear it with a southern drawl. Hey, you all, you look familiar. And they want to touch us. And what they want to touch is because they remember whom next to whom they were standing at Har Sinai. They know that there is something familiar. They know it's missing. They know it's part of their neshama. That netzach of Klal Yisrael, that eternity, is so clear. What we have learned from the Torah movement, from the Tshuva movement today, the thirst for knowledge is extraordinary. I had it revealed to me also in the Soviet Union a year ago. I was there for several days negotiating an agreement with regard to the destruction, preventing the destruction of the cemeteries in the Soviet Union. And while we were there, various people came to meet us. The night before we left, a young boy came up, an 18-year-old boy, gaunt, small, thin little beard. And the very next morning, he had to go join the army. And he said, I was there with some very important Jewish leaders, and he was looking to see whether there was some help that he could get. And he had spent the 6 months before that trying to feign insanity, hoping that that would get him out of the army, because he had become religious. And how was a religious young boy going to live and exist in the Soviet army? He couldn't get out because his parents were not religious, and his parents were not refuseniks, and they were not going to be part of the exodus, so that he was left stranded in the middle. And I asked him, what are you going to do tomorrow? He says, I'm going to get lost somewhere up in the north of Russia. He said, I cannot go into the army, because if I go into the army, I'm going to have to eat treif, and I'm going to have to be Mechal Shabbos. And I looked at this kid. Who taught him? Who taught him? From where did he learn? His parents wanted no part of it. For 70 years, the communists had closed Torah. They ran the most successful shmad in the history of the Jewish people. Yet there was a kid who almost on his own sought people out, learned, and then was ready to get lost in North Russia. And I told him, well, they're going to catch you. And he said, they may. I said, no. And he looked at me and he said, I have to do what I have to do, and the Rabbeinu Shalom will do what he has to do. I was never so jealous of anyone in my entire life. He remembered Maimad HaSinai. And throughout this country and throughout the United States and throughout the world, we have people coming to us who tell us that they remember Maimed HaSinai and ask us, help me remember. Don't not teach me, just help me remember. I was there. We know why we get up in the morning. Anu mashkimim ledivrei Torah. And our kids look at the world and they say, "V'hei mashkimim ledvogim betelim." They're getting up for world for frivolity, and it's not a life for us. They understand that there is something that is part of the Yiddish neshama that is ruchnius, that is pure spirit. There is a fire. And we have to be, all of us, every one of us involved in helping jog their memories. And you know it's not teaching, because the learning process is so fantastic and it's so quick, and the assimilation is so fast that it's shalei kederech hateva. It isn't the way normal learning takes place. And of course it is not. The recollection. Anu amelim v'heim amelim. They toil and we toil. Anu amelim u'mikablim schar. We toil and receive reward. The heim amelim and they toil. The enam mikablim schar. We all want reward. I like to be paid. I know that when I get telephone calls, I get two kinds of telephone calls. One that the first is, this Professor Twersky, I figure I got a chance for a fee. When the telephone calls, is this Rabbi Twersky? What is this? Anu amelim u'mikablim schar. We toil and receive reward, and they toil and they don't receive reward. Chofetz Chaim, zechuno livracha, said, the study of Torah is like any other study, like any other endeavor. Nobody pays anybody for work in which you cannot touch the productivity. You don't get paid for trying. You don't get paid for struggling. If a carpenter would come to build a cabinet for you, and he wouldn't build the cabinet, he would work hard and saw and, you know, and build and knock with the hammer, you wouldn't pay him. Deliver the cabinet.
Torah learning is not that way. Because the schar for Torah is the reward for Torah is the reward of the amelus. It is the struggle. And this too is at war with the common notions of about the way we live and the way we think about things. We define ourselves in terms of our productivity, what we are worth in the gross national product. Language gives us away. I'll ask students, I'll ask youngsters, what do you want to be? I get an answer, a doctor, a lawyer, businessman, accountant. And I'll tell them, look, you've told me what you want to do. Now tell me what you want to be. Look how our language gives us away. We define ourselves in terms of what it is we do. The language. What's he worth? Yeah, what's he worth? He's worth $1 million, $5 million, $10 million. Yeah. What's he worth? Language is very descriptive. It tells the story. And Rabbi Nechunya ben Akone said that the study of Torah is not part of gross national product. It is part of the struggle of a human being to come to grips with his own ruchnius, with his own spirituality. And the reward is the struggle, and the struggle is the reward. And it's so pervasive, the problem of defining everything in terms of risk-benefit. In law and economics today, the most pervasive theory in America is the utilitarian theory, risk-benefit theory. We calculate everything out. Government regulation. What should government regulation with regard to product safety be? We don't run a risk-benefit analysis. We find out how much risk, what the probability of harm is, what the gravity of the harm is, weigh it against what the cost of building safety is, and if it is cheaper to have the accident than to lose the foot or to lose the leg, then the product is not defective because it meets risk-utility guidelines. We are, after all, it meets the law and economics model. It's become part of our thinking. And our kids want none of it. And there's a young generation out there that is coming to us and saying, telling us about the tefillah of Rabbi Nechunya ben Akone. And they're saying, Anu Amelim, we want to struggle, but we are not going to define ourselves in terms of risk-benefit. We're not going to define ourselves as part of the gross national product. We're going to find ourselves in terms of our spirit, in terms of our mahus, in terms of our history, in terms of the majesty of Klal Yisrael. I had the occasion, and it, you know, you say, well, that's Olam Haba, that's the otherworldly stuff, and we're not an otherworldly religion. You bet we're not an otherworldly religion. I had the occasion, I started recently, this last month of Daf Yomi, now started, I started studying the Daf Yomi with my son-in-law. And this last Shabbos I saw my Mechutin in Shul, and I told him, I said, Mechutin, I says, I want you to know that learning the Daf Yomi with Yidi has nothing to do with Olam Haba. It's pure Olam Haza. It's pure the pleasure of being able to sit down with children and to study Torah in depth and to see the sparkle in their eyes and to see their involvement and to become part of it. And you touch your children and they are part of 3,000 years and you're touching it. You feel it. And that has nothing to do with Olam Haba. That's Olam Haza. That's enjoying this world. And only we know how to do it. Anu Ratzim, we pursue Vehem Ratzim, and they pursue. Anu Ratzim Lachai Olam Haba, we pursue eternity. Vehem Ratzim,
Lever Shachas, and they pursue the pit of destruction. I have a view of, you know, this. I mentioned product liability as a theme. It's an interesting theme for me. It's a major theme in American law. It's caused terrible dislocation in American industry and huge costs. And my own view of why there is such a thing, problem called product liability, is because American engineering cannot keep up with Madison Avenue. Madison Avenue sells products that American engineering can't make. But that is part of something that is very much deeper. And that is that Madison Avenue and advertising and the media sell unending desire, unending expectations, unending needs. They sell a bottomless pit which can never be satisfied. And I will tell you that I believe that Jews worship. Jews worship. Jews are believers. Jews will worship a God. Either they will worship our God or they'll find another God to worship. And we saw it in America in the 60s, who led the civil rights movement? But Jewish boys on campus and girls on campus. And who led the anti-Vietnam movement? Jewish boys and girls on campus. And who led the environmental movement and leads it today? In Mordnisch kein größere Sache auf dem Kopf, but the snail in some godforsaken ocean. American kids, Jewish boys and girls. And who, Rachmana Litzlan, are at the head of the gay and lesbian societies, but also Jewish kids. And what it means is that we will worship. The only question is which God and which prophet. And Rav Nachon ben Akana said, Anu Ratzim, we run, we pursue the Heim Ratzim. We're gonna run. The Jewish soul is not a sedentary soul. He can't sit by. There is a fire, and you got to do something with it. You will either satisfy a Jewish soul with Torah, or if not, you're going to find them in the bottomless pit. It will be unending and unsatisfying. There is a beautiful medrash in Rus. The Medrash says, that when a person does a mitzvah, he should do it with a full heart. For Reuven, Ilu hoya Reuven yedea, had but Reuven known, Sha'akadosh Baruch Hu machtiv alav, that the Rabbeinu Shalom would say about him, Vayishma Reuven vayatzileum yodam, that Reuven heard and he saved Joseph from destruction. Al kseifoy hoyem elichay yitzalav, if he would have carried him on his shoulder to his father's, to his father Jacob. Ve'ilu hoya yedea arin, and had arin hakoyin known, Sha'akodesh Baruch Hu machtiv alav, that Rabbeinu Shleim would say about him, Hinehu yoytze likrosecha, that when he went out to greet Moses, when he went out to greet Moshe Rabbeinu, he went out, Hinehu yoytze likrosecha, he went out to greet him. The Torah reported the event. The Medrash says, V'supi v'mim choylois, he would have gone out with a brass band to meet him. V'ilu hoya yoydea boyas, at boyas but known, Sha'akodesh Baruch Hu machtiv alav, that the Rabbeinu Shleim would write about him and say about him, that he handed Rus a
plate of parched corn. Vayitzbat lo koli vatoichal. He handed her a plate of parched corn and she ate. At goles mivutomaisuim achile. He would have given her fattened calves to eat. And so the Medrash says, you do a mitzvah, do it with your full heart. And this Medrash always perplexed me. What is it? Had Ruvain known, had Ari known, had Boaz known that the Torah would report the event, they would have done it in a different fashion. Why? They'd have gotten a better press release. They were looking for PR agents. I will tell you what the Medrash means. The Medrash is saying this. When you're involved in a mitzvah, you sometimes think it's a mitzvah, it's a small thing. You should know that you can't estimate its worth. Do it with a full heart, because it may change the course of human history. Reuven, when he saved Yosef, did not only save his brother, he saved the concept of Shiftei Koch, 12 tribes of Israel. When Aaron went to greet his brother Moses, he didn't go to greet merely his brother. He went to greet the Noisen Teira Le'ama Yisrael, the presenter of Teira. And when Boaz handed a plate of parched corn to a poor Gieris, he was not merely doing a mitzvah, he was serving the mother of Melech HaMashiach. There are moments in history that we can seize, and if we don't seize them, we're foolish. These days are those kinds of moments. This generation may be the last generation of Jews who we can still get to, who will still remember that they are Jews. A generation later, there may be no one to talk to. So when Kisha Odom Oise Mitzvah, do it with a full heart, we may be changing the course of history. That seed has changed the course and the lay of the land in England, you do not meet me to tell you. I suggest to you, it may change the course of history for Klal Yisrael.